Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for listening today. I'm very excited about our next guest. He's joined us before, and you can find his interview in our audio archives at exitcoachradio.com. He is John Grace from Investors Advantage Corp. in Westlake Village, California. And John always has some fascinating information, not the technical stuff we're looking for, but more thought-provoking content. And today's no different. We're going to talk about using demographics as tea leaves to read the economy. So, you know, you read a lot in the newspaper about what's going on, but John's going to really help us understand what's going on. So, John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Bill.
Pleasure to have you on. And before we get into this topic, which I'm really eager to talk about, let's talk a little bit about what you do at Investors Advantage Corp. Give our listeners a little overview.
Sure. Well, we've been at this since 1979, and we work with two groups, if you will, individuals, of course, and in particular, it's for those who haven't reached financial independence, making sure they see their goals so they might be able to hit the goal that they can see as opposed to throw darts, and those who have gotten to the point where they have retired, generally with not enough money. You know, now we need to help them understand what kind of account balance do you need to maintain so that you can maintain your retirement with dignity and, you know, not have to go back to work or try to get a job at Walmart, which you are overqualified for as your salvation because you ran out of money. All right. So it's about, you know, making sure the people on approach can see what they're trying to do well in advance of the landing field. And then those who are well into retirement, as I say, what are we going to do to make sure that you can stay fully retired? And then the other side of it is a lot of work with nonprofits and foundations, 401ks. They have kind of a different agenda, mostly because they see that they have to keep this thing alive for the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And they are particularly interested in transparency and, you know, making sure that they keep enough money. And at the same time, no matter what happens in the economy, they're trying to keep their accounts full and provide for greater consistency. So we work both sides of that particular fence, if you will.
Now, John, with all of that's been going on the last few years, you know, government intervention, keeping interest rates low, helping prop up the stock market, kind of investors looking for yield and going out on a limb to find it. It reminds me, if this was that old, the eight ball, remember the old eight ball, you shake it up and look and see, what does it say? It would probably say,
right.
Outlook cloudy, try again.
yeah, well put. I would say, you know, don't trust anything. There is nowhere to hide. And if I'm talking about the market, I suggest to folks, because, you know, there's so many factors and all these factoids that people are trying to keep on top of, and it's probably impossible. So I try to narrow things down. And what I'm saying relative to the market is, look, as I say, don't trust anything. There's no place for you to put it and forget it. It's hard to put it on autopilot. I don't believe, particularly when you need the money, that it is stocks for the long haul. I do not believe any longer that it is buy and hold or hold and hope, particularly when you're taking withdrawals. And the numbers that I'm asking people to watch for is first to watch the index, and let's just look at the S&P 500 only because that number is the easiest one to watch, and it's probably a better telltale sign of what's going on in the overall economy. And I think the number to watch is for 2000. Right now we're trending below 2000. Morgan Stanley suggests in October that we were going to get to 3000 by 1999, if I'm not mistaken. If we stay above 2050, that would be a very bullish sign. We might get to 3,000. If, on the other hand, we dip and stay below 1950, that's a very bearish sign, and I'm not sure how low it can go. The question that I'm rallying around as I pose it to clients is, let's prepare for the worst. And if we're at, you know, really 2,000, that's the number to watch. We were as low as 683, I believe, on March 2nd, 2009. Could we see that again? or worse. And more importantly, it's not about the prediction. It's all about the preparation. I mean, if you live in Malibu and there's a 7.7 earthquake off of Catalina and you survive to tell the story, you're fine. If you're in the news and we have to talk about you after everything is gone, well, that's not any fun at all. So we want to be prepared as well as we possibly can so we can tell our own stories.
And that's the big question, I think, for a lot of people is, you know, you look at the average investor out there and they look at, say, their 401k statement and it shows a lot of very low yields at the bottom in the bond and the money markets, zero yields in a lot of cases. And then you look
right
up high and you see the stocks and people go, okay, well, great, I'm going to gravitate to stocks. But are we in a day by day, you know, is this like, you know, we've had some tremors and now we're looking for the big one. Is this day by day or is the news better than that in the stock market? What's the outlook from your perspective?
I see a lot of tremors. I see a lot of headwinds. You know, if you're flying, to the East Coast, it takes you, from California to New York, about 5 hours. If you're coming back, it takes you about 6 hours. I think I got that right. But, you know, one way you're going, it's about an hour at a time to get to the same place. So I'm always looking for headwinds and tailwinds. The tailwinds propel us, help us get there maybe ahead of schedule, on time and safely. The headwinds are in front of us. They're the ones who keep us from getting to our respective goals as efficiently as we might want to. And certainly when it comes to bonds, we see the headwinds being very clear, rising interest rates. With stocks, I don't see 3,000. I do see that we could retest this low back in March of 2009. And today, you know, we all agree that the markets like consistency. And what we got was a shock to the whole exchange today with, the announcement of watching the road to normal proving more than, you know, it was happy. Now it's bumpy with we're seeing the changes with the policy shifts in Switzerland and India, which sent markets on wild rides. I think you're going to see more of that. And what you're seeing, I mean, let's understand, for the first time ever, we had, the 6, 7, 8 top global economies all printing money. They called it whatever they called it, but effectively it was the same thing. Well, that was like cocaine to the economy, or certainly to the stock market. At some point, that's going to stop. What we saw was them working in tandem. But now we see that they're not working together any longer. Who's going to be next, and what will that happen? What will that make happen? And then, you know, when interest rates start going up, I mean, we were down 3.5% first half to December 2014, picked all of that up right after the midway point through December, first week of January. But when interest rates, Yellen said we're not going to raise rates for a while, that's been another dose of cocaine, if you will. Well, what's going to happen when rates go up? You know it's just a matter of time. Do you believe all trees grow to the sky? And we're going to go from, 14,000 on the Dow, 2,000 on the S&P, and double that. Do you really believe that? So, you know, if that happens, we're all great. It really doesn't matter. But see, where it really does matter is when people start taking money out. And we bought the program buy and hold. And we see if we had $1 million on 1100, in spite of watching your account get cut in half twice in the last decade, 02, and then again in 08, now you're at 1.5. But that's assuming you didn't take any money out. If you were taking $60,000 out, Bill, from $1 million, same starting point, 1100, $60,000 a year, felt like you could just do that. 6% withdrawal seems reasonable, right? Well, if you didn't wake up until sometime 2014 and you were fully invested in stocks, you got about $160,000. Now how are you doing? So notice, when you don't need the money, it doesn't matter what the markets do. And if you were adding to the accounts when they were down 50%, you've got more money. But if you were taking withdrawals, what just happened? The money's gone and I'm still here.
Right.
What did we learn? Oh, my God, I may have 2 or 3 years and I need to quit. I need to go away.
I can't be out of money. I still have checks in my checkbook.
Understanding
that the markets have been manipulated in a lot of different ways, but the economy seems to be improving. Business to business, you hear that orders are picking up. But what do demographics tell us about the future? Let's talk about that. The using demographics as tea leaves to read the economy. What's happening?
Yeah.
How's it going to impact all this?
I think it's a good observation because it's one of those things that is fundamentally very strong. And yet we get lost in the tea leaves about what happened in the last 6 minutes or look at the last 10 years as though that's going to predict what the forecast is for the future. When we look at the economy, what are we, $17 trillion in spending on an annual basis, everyone, every economist hardly agrees about anything except what drives the economy. And the best way I found to put it is, let's suppose you had three dogs in your backyard. Which one would you watch the closest? Probably the biggest and the baddest dog, because they're the ones that could do the greatest damage to people and property. So when we look at our economy, as I say, $17 trillion, that's a number we all agree to. There's three parts, only three parts. This is good news. We've got government spending, we've got business spending, and we have consumer spending. If we go back and quantify them to see who's the biggest dog, government's probably 10% of spending total. Business may be 20% of spending. Everybody agrees the consumer is the biggest dog, 70, 72% of total GDP in the U.S. of A. So the consumer is the group to watch. And what we want to see is one of two behaviors in terms of the consumer. Are they spending more than they're saving, or are they saving more than they're spending? If they're spending more than they're saving, that's good for equities, it's good for bonds, it's certainly good for the stock market. If, on the other hand, they're saving more than they're spending, it's not good for much of anything. And then look a little further. Let's see, when does peak spending happen in the U.S. of A? It's generally for the average American mid-40s, 45 to 50. Okay, mm-hmm. And the average household income in America is about $50,000. Well, we had the majority of Americans, what, 76 million people born between 46 and 1964, reach mid-40s in 2007. Now, if we look for peak spending for the highly educated, this is where, to me, it gets a little more interesting. Peak spending for those who have, you know, the folks we have the pleasure of working with, the people on your show, tend to have a higher, more education. So that means, what do? They get married later. They have kids later. They peak in spending age 53. Guess what year the highest number of Americans have reached age 53. It happens to be 2014. And this comes from the Census Bureau, and we can look at the spending at 54, 55, 56 through 60, kind of look at your parents, and notice this. It looks like a waterfall. It's over. You know, the kids, you finally got done with the education, you know, you helped them with their cars, their colleges, and now outside of healthcare, all spending for the most part is optional. And if we look at boomers in this year, as I say, 46 to 64, that would mean Michelle Obama is turning 51 this year. George W. Bush, I believe, turns 68 this year. So that's 76 million people that we're trying to get back to where they were. Only, you know, you can't outmaneuver life. And as we get into our 70s, where will spending occur? As I say, outside of healthcare, it suddenly is all optional. We've never been here before. And you can't make a 70-year-old go buy $1 million house. They're done.
Well, so, yeah, and to add into
these
that,
are headwinds.
To add into that, there's so much fear about longevity that the person that might have bought an RV and gone traveling is now thinking, I'm worried about what's going to happen when I'm 85, 90, 95 years old now. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to cut back because I they're seeing what's happening in front of them, in other words, right? So that's another, that's a very fearful scenario where that spending might have been travel and leisure and you know, go have fun, so to die broke, if you will. But now people are worried about living broke, and so they're going to become more savers.
Well, that's exactly right. And if you see that happening, you know, if we become more savers, then you tell me what that means in terms of spending and what that means as far as companies are concerned, or what you think the odds are of us going from 2,000 to 3,000 on the S&P 500. I don't think the signs are very encouraging, just for the reasons that you identified. Certainly some people are going to continue to spend, always, but those are the exceptions, not the rules. Everyone else recognizes, geez, I didn't save enough, and God knows I cannot afford another 50 to 90% decline in my net worth because it's curtains. I just need to execute myself, exit stage left. I need to get out of here.
Okay, so that's the saving spending trend. What about the allocation trend? Where do people save money? Where do they protect money? It traditionally has not been in the stock market. So is there all that wealth that's being controlled by that group, is it due for a shift?
I think it is due for a shift, and I think people are trying to get ahead of that. I think for the first time, Bill, the average investor is about as astute as I have ever seen them. I mean, in 05, you had to really wrestle with someone about not buying more real estate. They just gave you that fickle finger of fate and said, I'm buying two more properties. Watch me get rich. And then a year later, they're like, oops. So, as I say, there's nowhere to hide. There's no sure bet. And we're suggesting that for those who can't afford, you know, who are preparing to retire and going to start taking money out, they have to understand they cannot afford a 50 to a 90% decline. So what can we do? We're suggesting that we be more diversified than ever before. Most of us cut our teeth on mutual funds, and the mutual fund industry have taught us that the best way to invest is through a mutual fund. And when we look at the mutual funds, no matter how many you count, there are really only three categories. It's cash, it's bonds, and it's stocks. That's it. Well, the hedge to stocks is commodities. How much exposure do you have to commodities in your mutual funds? None. So if you have real exposure to commodities, that's now a fourth leg underneath your stool, right? The natural hedge to bonds would be real estate investment trusts, business development corporations, where the yields are very predictable. That would now be the fifth leg underneath your stool. And then the natural hedge to the U.S. dollar, for those who travel, certainly understand foreign currencies. And that would be a sixth leg underneath your stool of your, you know, life savings. Insurance or annuities might be a seventh stool, but now we have seven legs underneath your stool. Certainly, we would all agree seven legs underneath anything is more stable than one, two, or three legs underneath the same thing that you're trying to keep alive for as long as you might need it. So the first answer is more diversification than you've ever had before. And then the second answer is active management. In other words, let's say in an 08, which was a terrible year, you know, some people are saying, look, I've got this mutual fund and it's so inexpensive. And I'm like, yeah, well, tell me what it did for you. The market was off 37. Your account's off 41%. Was less more for you? I don't think so. So we want you to have those who are looking at your account every day on your behalf because you're too busy, where the discussion is, if I'm in bonds or if I'm in stocks, maybe in a bad year, like 08, which was hell for both bonds and stocks, someone is routinely putting more of my money in cash, you know, becoming defensive in a bad year. So instead of being off 37 to 60%, NASDAQ was off 60% in 2008, let's limit the losses to 20%, because from 20%, we only need 25% just to get back to even. So let's do what we can in advance, put those principles in place so that someone's looking at your account to become more defensive in a bad year. Take your money off the tracks in a bad year, put it back on the tracks in 2009, back in bonds, back in stocks, for example. And then if we did that, say we lost 20% in 2008 and then the market was up 26, and let's just say we got a 30%, these are real numbers, in 2009, well, here you are. Everyone else you know, probably you, didn't get back to even until 2012, 2013. If you were off 20 one year and up 30 the very next year, guess what your account did? You're ahead of where you were 12/31, 2009 as compared to 1/1/08. That's a lot better than everybody else waiting 2, 3, 4 years later to get back to even. And thank goodness, as I say, they didn't need the money and maybe they were making contributions to the account, so the account is even larger. But we've got to prepare for the reality that we're going to start using this money.
John, what a great segment here. I mean, you always bring us a lot of great insight and information, and I really appreciate the, you know, that we went through a demographic kind of a history lesson, and to come to the point where now we have a realization of what some of the best strategies are. How do our listeners get in touch with you? What's on your website? What should they know about?
Well, they're welcome to look at Why Be Poor. That's our website, WHYBEPOOR. We try to make it memorable so people have a chance to actually find it. And we've got a number of videos that we talk about this. I happen to be a contributing writer for the Ventura County Star, Westlake Magazine. And I really try to do, you know, I appreciate having this opportunity because to me it's about people understanding what's going on and how can I read this thing in a way that it makes sense to me. We'll see if it's right or not, but that way it's not such a random walk on Wall Street, like there's no way to figure out what's really going on here. So they can see a lot of the videos and see our our thinking. We use some examples with real situations that we think help people see, here's what begins to make sense, and here are what the options are. And certainly it's very different than it was when we didn't have these options. And before, all we could talk about is buy and hold and hold and hope. But thank goodness some companies have come to the table in the last 14, 15 years with some different strategies, the use of technology that helps, as I say, move your money off the table in a bad year, put it back on the table in a good year.
That makes nothing but sense. I see why you're called Investors Advantage Corp. Investors who are with you really have the advantage of this insight. It's clear you've given us some great reasons why you think the things you think. You know, we read so much in the media that can pull us every which way. So give John a call. Go to whybepoor.com and find out why be poor. Well, why be poor, folks?
Yeah,
John, thanks very much.
Is it a question or
is it
a statement? My pleasure, Bill. You take care.
I really enjoy it. We're going to take a short break. We're going to be right back after this with another guest. So please stay with us. Hey, everyone. This is Bill Black, the Exit Coach. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever asked yourself, what happens to your life if there's another recession? Or when can I make work optional? Or am I taking on more risk than I should? Well, these are the kind of questions that the folks at Investors Advantage Corp answer every day. And you owe it to yourself to go to their website at www.ybpoor.com. That's ybpoor.com. John Grace and his team can help you to deal with these issues, get information, create a plan, and make sure that you're protected from all of these areas. So I encourage you, go to ybpoor.com, check out what they have to offer today.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.